Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades because they've been able to find their customers the right insurance at the best price. I don't care if it's auto, home, life, business insurance. You have a small business. You really have to make sure that every T is crossed, I dotted when it comes to your insurance coverage. Purdy Insurance will navigate all that for you. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sean Newcomb out of the University of Hartford takes a no-hitter into the ninth at SunTrust yesterday.
13th sellout of the season, fourth in a row. The wind, the 2-2 pitch. Ground ball left side and through. A base hit through the hole. A single to left. Agony on the field. Camargo on the ground. Acuna and Inciarte squatting in left and center. Brian Snitker coming out. And now the recognition for Sean Newcomb will begin. He didn't get the 27th out. But a tremendous performance by Sean Newcomb. A hug from Brian Snitker. Listen to this crowd.
Braves needed that because they are, 6-13 their last 19 games. They needed that game from him yesterday. The Phillies, the pursuers are not pursuing. And the Phillies, with Aaron Nola on the mound tonight, get David Price and the Red Sox at Fenway. All right, Wheels joins us. Always, my friend, great to be in touch with you. I'm not going to get into our text message exchange last week, which actually was pretty cool.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that. You and I had a lot of inside info to trade last week.
I get it. Renee said to me, are you and Steve going to talk about that? I said, No.
Well, we have a lot of inside info to trade, Renee, okay?
That's what I told her.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that. Hey, trade deadline's coming up. And already some deals have obviously been made, including, Ezdrubal Cabrera going to the Phillies. You've been around clubhouses so often over the last four decades, Wheels. What do these deals do to the makeup of a clubhouse when it happens?
Well, that's a great point, Steve. But for the most part, I was lucky enough to be around the real good teams that we had. It energizes the place because it makes the players that are there say, okay, good, the front office has our back. They can see that we have a few holes. And while we hate to see the guys who are leaving or possibly the guy who's coming in replace somebody who's been playing a lot, they totally get it. Sometimes you might get in a situation where a team's kind of grasping, kind of reaching for straws and all that, and for the stars, and they're not really that close, and they think they are, and they're just trying to do something to stoke their fans a little bit and get their fans interested and think they're trying and all that. I think that annoys a clubhouse when you do those kind of things. But when you're in a race and you've got a shot and you do something like they did with Cabrera, for example, the other day, that was a good move for the Phillies to do those kind of things, or what Boston did. That really does help a clubhouse, absolutely.
I mean, you've obviously been around not only the clubhouse, but the managers. Charlie Manuel's a great example. How did Charlie treat these things? Because it's not, sometimes it's somebody exiting, but it's also somebody getting in there and then having to blend in with what you're doing.
I think the biggest problem that a manager has, Steve, during that point of time, and it starts early, unfortunately, because of there's so much media now and so much of the internet and all that sort of stuff, that the rumors start a lot earlier than they used to, is to take care of your clubhouse and the players whose names keep coming up. Because look, to fans, those are just names. But to the player, that's a human being there who all of a sudden is going to have their life totally disrupted if, in fact, they are moved at the trade deadline, especially somebody who's in the city that they like and they don't want to leave. And they've been bouncing around for a while, and they've decided, man, I'm going to drop anchor. So I've always felt that the toughest thing for a manager, and you brought up Charlie, and he was good at that, was to try and somehow keep their heads involved in the game and saying, and, you know, they make those comments, and managers, you know, Kapler's done it a few times, that, hey, we got what we need, we're fine, we're great the way they are, but, you know, when they talk to you off the record, I'm not saying him, but Charlie, because I was around him, they talk to you then, you know, when nobody's around, they'll say, man, we need to get this, or we need to get another relief pitcher, or we need another piece in the lineup, or another offensive player, those kind of things. But it's more or less, I think, on a personal note, that it becomes a distraction, and a manager has to take care of that as best he can.
You mentioned Cabrera going over, saying you thought it was a good move. I agree with you. I think it's a really good move. It's one of those smart, subtle moves that doesn't shake up the entire organization, but I think makes the club better on the field, the Major League club better. Does that match up with what you're thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Cabrera is probably disappointed because he's not hitting off our staff anymore. We could never get him out. It was unbelievable, right-handed or left-handed. And he hit homers off us, too. You know, unbelievable the way that guy used to hit Phillies pitching. And, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, you fall in love with a player like that. You want to get him over there because you think, boy, he kills us. And it doesn't always work out that way. But, yeah, he can play. You know, they play him a little bit of shortstop. He was a shortstop, and I don't know that he is anymore. But you try to get by with it, and unfortunately he's gone 0-for-8 in his first two games. But he can swing the bat. His best position is second base, and we're loaded there. Cesar Hernandez is really a good player. Kingery's a good player, if you want to put him over there. So we got plenty of second basemen. He can also play third. So, you know, you could see him over there. But he's there to swing the bat and give you a little more offense in the middle of your order, give you a veteran player in your clubhouse who's been through some wars with the Indians when it counted, with the Mets when it counted, Washington when it counted. So, yeah, I think he was an excellent move.
Aaron Nola, you've been around aces before. You're watching this young guy progress, it seems like, every start. Are we watching a legit number one ace with a big future?
Boy, I never thought that, to be honest with you. I always thought at best he was a 2 and probably a 3, but he's really good right now. And look, baseball, and you love the game too, it's a long haul. You can't jump to conclusions on a guy because they have a couple good months. That's my opinion. You got to let it play out. You got to get a season in with them. Then you got to see what they do the next year. Then you start using that term ace. But is he showing that he's certainly the ace on the Phillies staff? And he's a guy that they look at and say, man, we're going into Fenway Park tonight against a team 41 games over 500, and we just lost 3 in a row. This is a game that you really would like to win and stop the bleeding against an amazing team in great atmosphere. And they're going to go into an atmosphere that's one of the best. You know, I've been lucky enough to be there a number of times, and it's great up there. It's loud and it's enthusiastic, and they're into the game the whole time. There'll be Phillies fans there too, so it should be good. But Nola, the thing that happened with him, Steve, is he really come up with a changeup that's changed everything, because hitters used to look for pitches on two planes with him. Fastball, okay, comes out of the hand that way, that's a fastball, that's in this area. Uh-oh, here's that big spinner coming up here, okay, that's his curveball. But now the thing comes out of his hand, it's a changeup that can look like a fastball, puts a third pitch in their head. And anytime a starting pitcher can do that with hitters and keep them off balance with three quality pitches, you really have a chance to compete. And that changeup has changed everything for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, see, that's with Evaldi. Evaldi, big-time fastball. Mm-hmm. Really, really good breaking pitch.
Oh, yeah.
What they did was they added a cutter.
Yep.
Right? And he tried the cutter years ago, and it didn't work for him. And now it works for him. Whomever at Tampa Bay got him to throw it the right way, it makes a big difference having a third.
Oh. We used to smoke that guy when he was with the Marlins and the Dodgers, and that was when the Phillies didn't have good teams. Because look, it's not like when you and I tried to play baseball, and no offense to our listeners, but you cannot throw a ball hard enough to a major league hitter down the middle that's straight. In our case, you know, we'd swing and miss, or say, oh my God, I don't even want to swing, I want to go home. But to a major league hitter, it's got to do something. It has to move, or it has to change speed and those kind of things. So a little thing like a cutter that looks like a straight fastball out of his hand and then moves at the end, oh, that can change him completely.
100, 101 straight, a major league hitter can actually handle with relative ease.
Doesn't matter if he doesn't have anything else in the back of his mind. That's why a Chapman and all those kind of guys, that they have to throw sliders. They have to throw something else, because if you throw a guy enough fastballs at that velocity and you're throwing them in the same place, they will hit you. And it's always amazed me the hand-eye coordination that major league hitters have.
I mean, it's really unbelievable. I mean, this is a minor league situation, not a major league situation. But State College had a guy years ago named Yoffrey Martinez. He threw 97, 98. And wheels, I mean, honest to goodness, it looked like a Montana highway. Absolutely straight.
Good description. Yeah, and they hit him. Even at that level, they hit him, I bet.
I mean, they're facing the Staten Island Yankees. I think they had Gary Sanchez at the time. And he hit one up the middle, almost tore his head off.
Oh, sure. That's one of the things about baseball. I mean, hitting, to try and hit, is if there's a little bit of deception, if there's a little bit of a change of speed and direction, it throws the hitter off. Just he only doesn't have much time to pick it up. You know, people don't realize that sometimes. I mean, they have a split second to see spin and figure out what that spin is and then where it's going to wind up. And if you just change speeds a little bit or get them a little bit off balance, they'll hit the weak ground ball or the pop-up. And that's what a pitcher has to do to compete in the major leagues.
Right, and that's why you and I both know if your changeup's about 9 miles per hour less than your fastball, the arm motion makes it look fastball, and it's not.
Perfect. That's a perfect description. And the third thing to that is, of course, they have to have the same arm speed they have with the other pitches. Because it's like when you were kids and a kid tried to fool around with a chain, well, their arm would slow up so much. Even when you were a little Babe Ruth League player, you could see that. Well, if a major league player sees the arm speed change, it's over. They know something off speed's coming, and if they see it as a strike, ooh, they go get it. If they see it as a ball out of his hand, they just take it.
Winning obviously is entertaining, but there's also more to it than that. What, in your opinion, makes this Phillies team fun to watch?
They are fun to watch. You know, you and I, you know, we saw each other in April, and for me, at that time, I think they played 5 games or something, and you know, it was a disaster the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Just awful with the things that went on and the way they were all over the manager. And, oh, it's terrible. But for you and I to have this conversation on July 30th, that we're talking about this team being in first place in a division and all the good things that have happened this year, to me, is just remarkable. And it's one of those things about why we love sports, because you can't figure it out. This team has so many flaws. And yet they have a lot of things they do well. They're part of the new era that some people don't like, is they take a lot of pitches, they foul off a lot of pitches, they unfortunately strike out a ton. They do have some guys that can hit some home runs. The thing that has made them a competitive team all year, Steve, is their starting pitching. They've had a pretty good rotation that's been pretty consistent all year. Their bullpen has at times been a little bit shaky, but at other times they're really able to put together innings and outs at the end of a game, and that's what baseball is nowadays. Now, some people don't like the way the game is played, but you know what? If you're going to compete and you're going to win, you have to do those things. Look, not everybody has Kimbrel at the end of the game. You know, we had to deal with him with Atlanta for all those years. Oh, yeah. That was not fun. You get him once in a while, but not once in a while he'd be a little bit wild. But you didn't get him too often. So, you know, that's a luxury that most teams don't have. Phillies have, you know, a couple guys that have been able to do some things at the end of the game that they've been able to get through it and be able to compete. And it's all about bullpens and starting pitching nowadays. And as far as the offense goes, this team has so many holes on offense and defense, and they're in first place. And I sit there at night when I'm watching and saying, enjoy this, boys. This is really remarkable to watch.
Yeah, because the pursuers aren't pursuing, which helps.
Yeah, well, Washington's still the best team. We all know that.
Yeah.
But they have something. they just can't kick it into gear and get into one of those stretches where they win 9 out of 10 or something like that. Now, you're coming up into August and September, and that's when the real teams show up. Neil, the Red Sox are just ridiculous. It'd be 41 over .500 at this point. They're coasting. The Yankees are still the Yankees, but, you know, they lost Stan for 3 weeks. And you know, you don't still know that they can catch them at this point to win the division. So that's just different. But the big-time games start to come up, especially in September. Why you play so many one-run games in baseball? I was around it all those years and still love it. I can't explain it, but you play a ton of one-run games in September, and you got to win them.
Yeah, you have to win them. I want to read this to you and get your reaction to it, because I think this goes not just to players but to people in our profession. Jason Witten raged about social media in a story for his new employer, ESPN, and Peter King related this on NBCSports.com today. Witten wrote this. One of the defining images of the modern locker room, or you can insert clubhouse, isn't a fiery post-game speech or a group of guys strategizing. It's players with their heads down buried in their phones. The impact, it's not good. I've seen the negative impact social media can have, particularly on younger players who grew up with Twitter and Instagram as an integral part of life. A player checking Twitter at halftime? I've seen it. The most concerning? Watching a really talented player corrupt his mind and confidence by reading all the critiques from anonymous football experts around the world. Negative social media can ruin a player. Reading your mentions, it's poison. What's your reaction to that in terms of you and I being around locker rooms and clubhouses? But also, I think this fits into what you and I have done in our careers, because we weren't around it and we're never bothered by it.
Oh, that is so spot on to hear something like that. I used to have to get the mail for somebody to tell me how awful I was. and then you'd write the letter back to them, or you didn't, or whatever. Oh, now, unfortunately, I know broadcasters that read that nonsense, between pitches, with what these fools are saying about them. And you tell me that doesn't affect you? It has to.
Of course, it absolutely affects you. Now you can't
do it.
In fact, I mean, Wheels, no offense. I mean, because I know you've texted me during the game, and you already know what I do. I get back to you after the game. You want to know why?
Sure.
My phone is not there. I take it and put it away. Right?
Amen.
And if I want to know if I'm doing a good or bad job about something, I'll talk to you. Because you know what the seat's like. I don't really need to talk to somebody else.
And I always totally, I rarely will send you something during the game, because I totally know you're not going to see it till it's over. And that's the way I was, too, at the end, when it was really starting to kick in at that point, when they wanted you to be on Twitter and all that nonsense. And I didn't want to do it, and I don't think Comcast liked that. It may have been one of the reasons why they got rid of me. But I would never look at my phone during the game. Never, because you don't know. Someone has your email, the Phillies email or something, and they'll send you something, and you'll hit it by accident. I didn't have Twitter. I wasn't going to read that nonsense or text.
Right.
But no, you don't do that. And I can't believe that does not affect you if you're watching, if you're doing your job, and somebody is sitting in their basement, sending you a nasty tweet about something you just said. Look, you can't be a dinosaur in this world. I'm in my 70s right now, and I totally understand how important social media is to the world.
Me too.
But I certainly think it also has its drawbacks. It's not good in so many ways. It's so impersonal. It's so rude. People are just ignorant, and they're hiding behind their anonymity. I really detest it in so many ways, and yet I totally understand that it's important in a lot of ways, too. And I'm not going to be one of those people to put their head in the sand and say it should go away, because it's not going to go away.
Right.
But it's kind of a – unfortunately, it's a reflection of society where everybody wants something instantaneous, and it's rude. It's just – I wasn't brought up that way, and I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, no, and the fact that a player lets somebody on Twitter affect their performance because they're thinking about it. Just go play. Just go broadcast. You know, it was an interesting story. It was a couple of years ago. We were out at dinner. Jack Ham and I were at dinner with the rest of the radio crew, Roger and Jeff and everybody. And Jack leaned over to me and says, "Hey, what time is it?" Now, I don't wear a watch. And, you know, of course, to check the time, I'd have to check my phone. I says, "I don't know. I don't have my phone with me. I don't bring my phone to dinner." And Jack looks at me and says, "I don't bring my phone to dinner." He says, "This is really great." Because, you know, when you and I have lunch, we never look at our phones. Our phones aren't there. When you and I have lunch, you and I just talk, and we have a great time, laugh our way through a couple. And, I mean, I'm talking like these aren't 30-minute lunches. You and I have, like, two-hour lunches.
That's a great point. I never thought of that. You know, I do. Unless I'm expecting something that's really important, you know, I keep it in the pocket with the buzzer on. And, you know, if I know, I say, "Hey, I'm sorry, I got to look at this." But it, really, I don't look at it. I don't want to be looking at it when I'm with somebody else. And, you know, you and I don't have that much time together. So, you know, my feeling always is, let's enjoy this.
Yeah, exactly right. Wheels, one of my favorite people on the planet. You're the best. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time. And we will cross paths again shortly. And we'll probably text each other several times between now and September 1st.
So how's my team look?
You're going to like your team.
Yeah.
You're going to like your team.
This
is going to be a fun team to watch if Comcast lets them.
That's another good point. Yeah, well, I'm all over it, and I keep reading my websites and everything. So I'm glad the last bash went well, and recruiting seems to be going great. So looking forward to it, as always, and to hear you guys.
And you know, anytime you want something, just text me. I'll get back to you.
I'll be up for the Iowa game, and I hope I catch up with you.
Oh, that'd be great. That's Military Appreciation Weekend, too, so we're looking forward to that.
Thanks, Steve.
Wheels, thanks so much, my friend. Tell Renee I said hi.
Great to talk to Steve from Lemoyne. It's my pleasure. See you.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We'll come back with more in a moment from the Sunbury Motors Studio on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I don't care if you want auto, home, life, business, all of them. You go to Purdy Insurance. I want to go to the pros. You know me, I like to be associated with the best. Purdy Insurance falls into that category. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Speaking of the best, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, final half hour of the show. We have dealt with calls, emails, guests. Now some open time. And we'll take calls, obviously, or emails during this open time, which we'll relay to you on the air. We'll start with this story, then we'll move back to the social media story. Jim Harbaugh. Emily Carone wrote this today on SI.com. It says, a feature on Michigan quarterback Shea Patterson from Bleacher Report's Matt Hayes contains the story as told by former Michigan quarterback Wilton Spate. Spate says, quote, early in my Michigan tenure, Harbaugh pulled me aside and told me not to eat chicken. Hayes writes, that's a protein considered fairly safe by nutritionists. Spate asked why. Harbaugh told him, because it's a nervous bird. Spate said he thinks some type of sickness injected its way into the human population when people began eating white meats instead of beef and pork, Spate said, who's now at UCLA, and he believes it 100%. So if you take this to the next level, does he want wide receivers and running backs, especially wide receivers who want to be fleet of foot, to eat beef? Beef comes from a cow. How fast is a cow? Oh. This is what you're competing against. All right, so... that's what you're competing against. You're just shaking your head, I can tell.
Yes. Yeah, that was okay. Not brought up at Big Ten Media Days last week.
That story wasn't out yet.
No.
And believe me, the story was out, he would have been asked, hey, what's this thing about chicken? And he would have answered it. It's about chicken and eating. Okay. I mean, you ever watch one of his press conferences? It's not enjoyable. It's not entertaining. It's like you feel like you're slogging your way to the finish. Back to the quote from Jason Witten. This was in Peter King's column on NBC Sports today. And Jason Witten wrote this for ESPN, which Peter then quoted. He said, one of the defining images of the modern locker room is not a fiery post-game speech or a group of guys strategizing. It's players with their heads down, buried in their phones. The impact, it's not good. I've seen the negative impact social media can have, particularly on younger players who grew up with Twitter and Instagram as an integral part of life. A player checking Twitter at halftime, I've seen it. So the most concerning, he says, watching a really talented player corrupt his mind and confidence by reading all the critiques from anonymous football experts around the world. Negative social media can ruin a player, okay? Reading your mentions, it's poisonous. And that is so true. I'm with Wheels. I know it's 2018. So I know how important social media is. I completely understand it. I mean, just because I'm not a user of it doesn't mean I don't understand it, because I do understand it. I understand the ability to get a lot of followers and get your message out or information out to a lot of followers all at once. That's invaluable. Sean uses my Twitter account all the time to let people know who's going to be on the show, for example. Right? And Sean's had a pretty good story to tell on guests over the past couple of years. Had a great story to tell, I think, just in the last 2 months, for goodness sakes. And he can do that on Twitter and get it out to a mass group of listeners, and on Facebook to a mass group of listeners right away. So the people go, hey, oh, wait a minute. Wheels is going to be on the show on Monday at 4:06. Great. Make sure 4:06 I'm there. Okay? So I know how important and valuable it is. I know how important and valuable it is for a media person covering a game to sit there in the pregame warm-up and say, hey, I'm watching pregame warm-up. There is no, and fill in the blank. There's no Saquon Barkley out there warming up. Or Barkley's out there, but he's not dressed. He's got a sweatsuit on. Okay? And that gets out to a wide mass where you're getting news out there. So I understand that part. So everyone understands, and it's great with Facebook. You can stay in touch with people. You know, hey, look how big the kids are. Great. Okay. All right. You can find like-minded people who feel the same way you do about certain issues. That's great. So I think I've established I have zero issue with social media at all. None. I have no issue with it in terms of the existence of it and how it can be properly used. Okay, now let's draw the line. And the line for me, and this goes for a player, but it also goes for a broadcaster. I do not look. My phone is in my bag. I do not take my phone out until the game is over with. I do not want to sit there and, like, it breaks. Well, during breaks, Jack and I talk. During a break, Jeff Tarman and I may talk. Hey, Steve, I need you to do this, this, and this. Okay, great. Okay, let's make sure. What order do we have it in? Okay. All right. So this you want me to do this one first, go down to Derek, come back, I'll do this, and then we'll get back into the game. Yeah, okay. So that's what we do. Jack and I will talk. Jack said, geez, he says, do you look at how the safety's playing in that one? The depth of his drop is not correct. He'll say that to me during the break. And you'll know, we'll come out of the break, and I'll start asking him about it because we talked about it. Because neither one of us have our phones out during the game. Ever. Ever. Okay? Neither one of us brings our phones to dinner. Ever. Ever. I sit there at dinner. Other people may be on their phones. I'm not. To me, it's all about, hey, we went out to dinner with this group of people. Let's go out, have some laughs, let's talk, let's have a good time, let's laugh, let's argue, let's whatever. Yeah, it's old-fashioned, but I'm a big believer in just enjoying people. And when it comes to evaluation of the broadcast, of course you want to hear people love the job you're doing. You always do. I had a guy from Las Vegas come up to me. I was at Jersey Mike's today getting a sandwich. It'd be great if we got him on as a sponsor. He'll get a lot of free sandwiches. Now. I'm thinking of you, Sean.
They are good sandwiches.
They are good.
They are good.
And this guy's from Las Vegas. And he says, I listen to every game out there on the internet all the time, the whole thing. I mean, and he had a lot of nice things to say. Of course it feels good to hear that. Of course it does. Right, but at the same time, you say thank you, and I know for a fact, plus or minus, it makes you feel good, but it doesn't affect what you're doing work-wise. Right? And as for the negative stuff, I tell my class, okay, don't read stuff about yourself. Don't do that. Okay? Negative stuff will make you think too much. Positive stuff will make you think you're better than you are. Okay? Say thank you for all the positive stuff you get. Be really appreciative of it because that means a tremendous amount, and then go back to work. All the positive stuff, to hear that, you're like, it makes you feel good, like you're doing something right. Okay? But then you got to go back to work. And I tell my class that all the time. That's the same for a player. But players sitting there at halftime reading their mentions, my goodness, no, you can't do that. And they also mention in the article that too many players look at their grade on Pro Football Focus. What does that mean?
They must think it's going to be up to the second stats when they take their halftime break.
Right, but, take care of the
adjustments over here by the chalkboard with the coach.
The social media stuff, they're checking halftime, they're checking in postgame, and so forth. During the week, like when the grades come out, Pro Football Focus, like that night, Monday, whatever, the players are getting all worked up one way or the other as to what they're seeing on their grade. No. The late Gil Santos told me something 35 years ago that has always stuck with me. All right? And I think this goes to any profession. I don't care whether it's the great people at Purdy Insurance or it's the great people at Sunbury Motors or Brewers Outlet or in broadcasting or as a player or a coach. He told me, you will get to the point in your career where you'll be the first one to know when you've done it right. You'll also be the first one to know when you've done it wrong. You'll be the first one to know when you've done it right. You'll be the first one to know when you've done it wrong. You won't need somebody to tell you. You know, and think of what you, all of you do professionally out there. When you do something like, and you realize, like, oh, geez, what the heck was I thinking on that? Why did I do that? Why did I do it like that? I mean, do you need somebody at that point to walk up to you and go, hey, Bobby, you really screwed that up? You already know you did. Or when you've done something really well and you sit there and say, all right, you know what? I checked every box on that one. I feel good about that. Now, it's nice to hear say, hey, Bobby did a great job on that. You know, it just confirms, but you were the first one to know that you did it right. You're the first one to know when you do it wrong. And that's with any profession. I mean, does Antonio Brown need to have somebody on Twitter tell him that that drop pass on third down was awful and he's the worst of all time? Okay? Antonio Brown was the first one to realize that he should have caught the ball. Okay? Antonio Brown's also the first one to know that he made the big move, made the big catch, made the big play. He's the first one to know he did it right. Doesn't need anybody to confirm it and tell him. And if you have any questions as a player, you go to your coach, the one that breaks down film and says, hey, look, you ran that route a half yard too shallow because you ran it a half yard too shallow. That's why the ball was overthrown. Or you ran it a yard too shallow, maybe 2 yards too shallow. You got to run it out 2 more yards. That's the proper depth that you make. That's what the coaches are there for. All right, you're struggling catching the ball. They'll put you on a jugs gun. Bang, 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 one after another, trying to get your confidence going, get your confidence up. That's why you have coaches. You don't need somebody on Twitter to tell you, okay? Okay? I want sheet metal advice, I'll go to Kevin. If I want coaching advice, I'll go to James. Yeah, I mean, right? You go to people who are experts in the field. I mean, I couldn't tell you, you know, Purdy Insurance tells me everything I'm doing with my insurance. Okay? Right? They're the experts in, you know, insurance. So I go to them. Okay? So, you know, they want to know more about what's going on in sports, they allegedly go to me. I think. I hope. That's why with the social media thing, everybody comments on everything all the time. And you can't get wound up in the poison of it. I mean, when a game is over, okay? When a game is over, I know... I try. There's a number. If I can keep mistakes down to under 5, okay. But I know every one I make when I'm done. I could have called that play better. I missed on that one. I didn't pronounce that guy's name right. Well, and I'm usually under 5. At least I'm what I'm doing. But I know each one of them. I know, because I know when I'm done. Like, oh, jeez, what'd you say that for? I mean, do I need somebody on Twitter? Hey, you missed that. Get out of here. Come on, man.
And to the average listener that loves your broadcast, there's probably times where they will hear something. They don't think it's a mistake, but... you thought, oh, yeah, I could have done that even better than how it came across.
Oh, I know.
I'm my own worst critic, too. I mean, I'm that way, too.
Oh, no, I'll say something. Kathy will look at me and go, what? Huh? Like, don't worry about it. I don't lament them. I don't sit there and go, oh, no, the whole day's a disaster. Right? I'll sit back and go, yeah, I could have called those two better. Well, that's out of 140 plays. Okay? You know, you got to walk out and go, ah, those two were lousy. That one was lousy. Those three were lousy. Whatever. It's out of 140 plays. Okay? Since I have no bearing on the winning and losing, I don't walk out of there depressed. You know, I didn't fumble a ball or throw an interception or anything like that. So I have to do with the winning and losing.
Hey, Juwan Johnson touchdown grab versus Iowa. Grant Haley run back versus Ohio State. Complete opposite of lousy.
So, I'm just saying, though, it's like, you know, you. But you can't, and it's hard for young broadcasters. Young broadcasters are really hard. Really, really hard. Guys like Wheels and I can kind of, at this stage of our careers, you know what I mean? You've established yourself. But if you're trying to establish yourself, you have to be on social media. You have to be. And I do understand that. I understand that completely. But you can't let it run you. Okay? Pro and con, you can't let it run you. You're the worst broadcaster ever. Well, if that's fine. Yeah, it matches up. You're the worst fan ever. No. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Well, here's a trivia question for you. Since Nick Saban's first year, where he went 7-6, do you know how many pure road games he has played, his team has played in non-conference? Two. One of them at Penn State. Two. I think that they should put in something that if you're not going to go to 9 conference games, you must play a minimum of 10 Power 5 teams. 10 Power 5 teams. Now, if that means you've got to play 2 of them in non-conference, well, it's fine. But if you want to qualify, for the college football playoff, then you need to play 10 Power 5 schools. For the Big 12, Pac-12, and Big 10, they have 9 conference games. That means they have to schedule 1.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.